Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week, Bristol residents against 5G. Ian Usher, Mark Simmons and Lucy Harper come and tell us all about what's wrong with 5G. Bristol is open and Freya Lockwood from Bristol Smart City were also invited but didn't reply. So we're having a good look at 5G, this new system. We've got 2G, 3G and 4G, now 5G. But there's quite a lot of people who are worried about health risks and environmental concerns in the city and want the whole thing stopped until a proper study has been done to make sure it's safe. Then Amira Cole and Ornella Sabin join us. They are trying to save the M32 maples. Apparently, a gang turns up with no hard hats to try and chop these trees down. Who are they? And what can be done to stop the trees being chopped down? Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk and based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, the Arts Centre on Jamaica Street. If you've got someone you'd like us to interview or would like to volunteer with us, have a pen and paper ready at the end of the show. Well, I'm joined by three people from a reasonably new group called Bristol Residents Against 5G. And I'd like, if it's possible, to introduce each one and then see why they think 5G is something that we should be concerned about. And I think I'll start with you, Lucy Harper. What was it that first made you think that something was to be a little bit concerning about 5G? Because we're being sold this as a great new technology. If you haven't got 5G, you're not smart. You must be stupid.
I'm certainly not stupid. I'm a nutritional therapist, and I was seeing lots of clients with a lot of health issues, and it struck me that there's something else going on other than just poor diet and poor lifestyle, because there's just too much disease and too many health issues in this country for it to be purely down to diet and lifestyle.
Well, certainly, but I mean, surely that could just be maybe toxins in the environment, maybe breathing stuff in.
Absolutely, it could be. You're right, it could be the pollution, especially in big cities like Bristol. But then I started to listen to the 5G summit, which is 40 experts speaking about electromagnetic fields.
Okay, so where and when did that happen?
That happened a few months ago. In fact, you can still access it. It's on the Bristol Residents Against 5G's website. You can find references to that. And it's 40 experts talking about health-related issues to do with electromagnetic fields and radiation. And that started to join up the dots.
Okay, so you're seeing in specific people that you're dealing with problems that may be being explained
by... Absolutely. Unexplained symptoms that could well be due to their high exposure to electromagnetic fields and radiation.
Okay, Lucy. Well, Mark, I know you as a photographer, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we first met. Mm-hmm. But you've taken this up as a important cause. What was it first got you interested in 5G?
Well, a friend of mine, I was speaking with her, and she's decided to leave Bristol because there was a transmitter outside her child's school, and she was so concerned that she felt she had no option.
But can she not go to the school and say, look, I don't want this transmitter here?
I think she tried all of those options. She wouldn't have left if she didn't have to.
So she felt that 5G was actually a reason to leave the city?
She was sufficiently concerned. She'd done, as a result, she looked into the whole area extensively, and the more she looked into the actual independent research that was being done, the more her fears were confirmed of the dangers of...
So that's a friend you've seen that's worried about this. What about you yourself?
So then I started looking into it, and when I realised, three things, really. One, that industry weren't doing any safety testing. Two, the cell phone manufacturers themselves, if you look at the small print, they're saying you should have the phone more than an inch away from your body. And most people are totally unaware of that.
Well, I mean, there must be maybe reasons for them not having to do testing, in that they've said, the industry, I'm sure, if they were sitting here, would say, well, actually, we've seen that the results in the initial testing of this technology, and it's all fine. It's, you know, it comes within the existing safety standards in the EU.
Well, they haven't been doing those tests.
So they haven't actually been testing this specific 5G phones and the masts, is that what you're saying?
They've only tested the thermal effects of electromagnetic fields and radiation. They haven't tested the non-thermal.
Hang on, this is microwave oven style we're going.
Absolutely, it is.
So the idea that a mast, you probably might even be able to boil an egg by sticking it on a microwave phone mast. But anyway, we're also joined by Ian Usher. Ian, what was it that first got you interested in 5G? What I thought was something to get concerned about?
Yeah, well, it's actually a kind of personal journey about my own health. I was aware, when I cycle a lot in Bristol, and I became aware that I was beginning to have heart pains whenever I cycled up a hill. And it dawned on me, maybe this is my mobile phone, because I used to keep it in my top pocket. And I thought, that is weird. So I started to take it away, and the pain subsided, but it stayed with me. And eventually I ended up having to have some a stent fitted. And since 5G has been introduced, my heart condition has got considerably worse.
Well, can you tell us what sort of symptoms that you've seen?
Extreme pain across my chest when I'm cycling up hills. I also get, I know they can be all attributed to normal heart conditions, but it's just a bit more of a coincidence, or it seemed to me, that this happened as a result of me having my mobile phone. And when I started to research about microwaves, radiation, which up until then I thought was purely thermal, I discovered there are biological effects that you can get.
I mean, and so how can a mobile phone affect your heart? I mean, that sounds... we're certainly not told about that when we buy them.
Well, your heart contains an awful lot of water, and so does your brain. And microwaves and water like each other.
So you're saying that the microwaves are kind of absorbed by your heart or by your brain?
They were doing... I believe personally they were doing damage to my heart, yes.
I mean, didn't you also maybe think that you had a condition which was slowly getting worse anyway? It was nothing to do with the 5G?
Well, I could think that, but at the time 5G wasn't actually around. This was actually microwaves from the normal masks. But when I started researching, I started becoming aware that there was another technology coming in, which is 5G... I started looking into it an awful lot more.
Okay, so in the city, we've got a couple of different organisations that are pushing out 5G. Something called Bristol is Open, where there was what you would have to call really an advertorial for Bristol is Open in Bristol 24/7 last year, in 2019, which was really saying, oh, this is a brilliant, fantastic technology. We will be able to keep monitoring the docks so that people don't fall into the water, which I found a little bit of a stretching a point to say that this is 5G is going to help with this, that we'll be able to stream high-definition films, download them within a matter of seconds onto our phone, although, of course, you don't need to download a one-and-a-half-hour film in just a few seconds, really. It's not necessary. And that's called Bristol is Open. And then there's another organisation called Bristol Smart City. And I spoke to their representative, Freya Lockwood, in 2019, and asked her if she would do some radio interviews, and she said no, she didn't want to do that. Looking into her, she was an employee previously of a company called Kinetic. Now, Lucy, I know we were wondering, what is Kinetic? This is actually something called, I think you said, DERA.
It was part of the government and military development. It was originally
It's called Defence Evaluation and Research Establishment. Yes. So she used to work for the people who were developing military technology for the military to fight and win wars. Yes. And so she's come from, whether it's the Malvern Hills or Salisbury Plain or wherever, to now introduce this technology for us. So I, in a way, am not entirely surprised that she didn't want to come on the radio and talk about her technological background and why exactly somebody who has an expertise in military weapons was coming in to sell this technology to us here in Bristol.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I remember going to a meeting with a representative from Bristol smart city, and I asked them whether or not they knew anything about the peer-reviewed research papers on the health issues related to electromagnetic fields, and they just shrugged and said, there are none. Well, actually, there are thousands of peer-reviewed papers on the biological and health effects of non-ionising electromagnetic fields.
Hang on, what is a non-ionising electromagnetic field? Can you just explain that?
Well, I don't want to get into the technicality of it. It's not something I'm really good at. I don't know if...
And before Ian does, I just want to say a little bit more about Bristol is Open before we leave the topic. Julie Snell, who's the person who was running that, I also invited her onto the radio. She didn't want to talk. She's a chief executive, and she's from BT. So, obviously, BT is a telecoms company. In fact, it was the GPO that used to run the whole of the telephone system and was then privatised to become BT. So she's also got, should we say, skin in the game. She's somebody who's from a telecom company making vast profits from data networks, and so she's hardly an independent person. Anyway, so, sorry, Ian, you wanted to say something.
Well, no, I just wanted to explain a little bit more about 5G, because...
Yeah, what is it?
Well, people seem... We've been sold the idea that it's just the next step up from 4G, but in actual fact, it's a completely different system. And it uses a beam as opposed to waves that come out from a transmitter. So it's a focused beam that can be focused on individuals, onto anything.
How can it be focused? Surely it's just a beam. Sorry, I mean, it's just like a radio signal. It's kind of coming out in all directions.
It has a lens. There's a lens in there that they are able to direct the beam.
How? Is it an electronic lens?
It's an electronic lens that has a lens element to it. So the electromagnetic wave can actually be directed. So this allows for a lot of other types of technology, like the driverless cars.
But why do they need to do that?
For things like driverless cars,
So, for example, say something is going down the street, which has got a 5G receiver, the mast can direct the signal straight
out
the car.
The car can tell where it's going, basically, because it presents it with a three-dimensional grid, so it knows where it is, which you can't do when they're ordinary waves, I believe.
Okay, so anyway, what about insurance, Mark? I understand that some of the people involved with 5G have been finding it rather difficult to get themselves insured.
Well, Lloyds of London aren't insuring against the effects of electromagnetic radiation, so that was one of the things that kind of the other thing that got me concerned about the safety of it.
I mean, is there any real difference? Does anybody know between 5G and 4G? Obviously, it's a little bit more powerful.
It's in millimetre wave, essentially.
It's high frequency. It's moving into the gigahertz range of the spectrum.
Okay, so that means there's much more energy in the wave itself. It's much more able to, say, cook something rather than just be like an ordinary radio wave.
Yes.
It just doesn't travel long distances. It's why they're having to put them every few houses, the transmitters.
Now, the way most people will be thinking about 5G, listening to this, will be to do with Huawei. It's been a massive amount of news for months about whether the British government, Lucy, are going to be accepting Huawei as part of the wonderful new 5G network, but very little discussion about actually how wonderful that 5G network will be. So what's going on there?
Yeah, there's just concern about, because the whole point with 5G, it's data transfer. It's that you can access, the telecommunications companies can access an awful lot of data, all about people, so that they can then sell that data. So there's lots of money at stake with the whole development of 5G. But like you say, the only thing we're actually considering is the safety issues with regards to information and the sale of information and Huawei. But we're not looking at the biological effects of radiation, and that's not being discussed. And whether or not the benefits of having 5G are outweighed
are the effects? Because obviously some people have been doing tests, even if the people bringing 5G in haven't. So what do we actually know about how dangerous the health effects might be?
There's thousands and thousands of peer-reviewed studies showing that there's a link between your exposure, even to 3G and 4G, to brain tumours. We know that mobile phones are linked to brain tumours. There's lots of studies to show that. And what's really interesting is if it's an independent study, An independent study will show adverse health effects 68% of the time. If it's an industry-funded study, it only shows adverse health effects maybe sort of 26% of the time. So there's a massive discrepancy.
Well, you know what? I've seen the same sort of thing exactly going on with vaccines. If the company manufacturing the vaccine does a study, they find them very successful.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes, by the way, the regulators go through the fine print and they find that certain negative comments or negative experiences, like people dying of the vaccine, have not been included in the final report. But anyway,
absolutely.
So it does seem as if a lot of this, a lot of the people who are actually looking into this are the industry themselves. I mean, how independent are the regulators? Who's doing the regulation? Do we know?
That's the problem. The Public Health England are basing their guidelines on an organisation called the International Committee for Non-Ionised Radiation Protection, which is an American-based company, and they are what you call a captured group. So there's lots of people from the telecommunications industry within that group, and the same applies to the World Health Organization. So they are very careful in what information they disclose and what studies they actually disclose.
Okay, so let's just be clear. When you talk about non-ionising radiation, we're talking about radiation that is coming out of a mobile phone mast. So it's not nuclear, alpha radiation, beta gamma radiation.
Yeah, we're talking about the sort of typical radiation that we might get from a router, from our mobile phones, from Wi-Fi generally.
I mean, personally, have you ever experienced any real effect from things like Wi-Fi or from people
sometimes,
using that?
For instance, I can feel it. If I'm charging my laptop, I can feel it, and it feels horrible. You get this tingling feeling. What I have noticed is since moving to Bristol, I get a lot more headaches, feelings of nausea and low energy, and that also made me start to think, what is going on here? But I know from my research that electromagnetic fields impact on DNA replication. So that means it will affect the way we repair. It affects cell membranes. It affects voltage-gated calcium activity, which means it will affect every single body system. It causes infertility. Symptoms that people present with all the time, I'd say, were headaches, nausea, dizziness, tinnitus. It's these little things, and people are very often unaware that it could be linked to that. I'm not saying it's always linked to that, but that can be a factor in it.
And we'll put an extensive list of those studies on our website that the listeners can check
out. Well, you won't. I will.
You will. Okay.
So if you give us a list of those, that's be really good, and you'll find that at dialectradio.co.uk, a list of some of these studies, because I think it's, you know, is sometimes you're left in some sort of doubt, Lucy, aren't you, as to what's caused it? And that actually can itself,
absolutely,
you know, it's almost as if you don't really want to move on with your life until you know what's causing something. And actually the information is very difficult to find as to whether something like this, which you can't see, might be causing health problems.
Absolutely. But if you were to go to our website, stop5g.co.uk, you'll find lots and lots of videos on there and reference papers and links to other sites with loads and loads of research studies.
I did ask you about Huawei a minute ago, but
yes, that's not an area I've really got into. I sort of felt I was much more interested in the health aspects of it rather than the
who's building
it, selling the information,
and how cheap it is, and how expensive or hackable it is. I mean, that's another aspect to all of this, I suppose, Mark, is the hackability. If your home is a smart home, the Internet of Things is ruling your life, and you've got a washing machine, a toaster, your central heating system, which is all connected up via 5G to your mobile phone when you're on holiday in Spain. It does sound as if you know you're a little bit vulnerable to hackers.
I don't know a lot about that, but that's certainly one of the concerns. And the fact that a lot of industry, a lot of corporations are now using a hardwired option, using fibre optics directly into the building rather than
wireless. Because the fibre optics and even a hardwired, a wired connection in your house, uses less energy as well. So I don't know what about the whether the environmentalists have really gotten onto this. So what evidence is there of, I mean, we've been talking about effects on human health, but what about the environment more generally?
Well, I'm sure your listeners are aware of the massive drop in insects and bees pollinating insects. And
well, we're told this is to do with pesticides.
Well, it could well be to do with that as well, but it's kind of a heady mix of that and, well, the fact that a company has taken out a patent on using EMFs as a pesticide shows that what it does, basically.
So EMFs, that is to say 5G, somehow could be used to kill bees? Wasps?
Yes, as an insecticide. I mean, the patent has been taken out by a company.
My angle on the environmental side is probably the energy that these things use. So if you're communicating between two devices through the air, through microwaves, it takes something like 100 times more energy than if you're doing it through fibre optics. I can't quite understand why it is that the fibre option is, I mean, obviously for something like a driverless car, that's necessary. I mean, what's your thoughts about, say, that sort of technology, driverless cars themselves? This is obviously a way of saving on people's time and effort. I mean, if you can just get into a car and pick up a book and go somewhere without having to bother to drive, then that's, you know, you've got that extra bit of time.
Is that really a priority for most people? It's ridiculous, I think.
Driverless cars.
I mean, it's a nice
idea.
You can
go on the train, I suppose, but if you can find one that's cheap enough or not overcrowded.
Yeah. Why irradiate everybody 24/7 just so you can have driverless cars? I mean, let's get real about this. The problem with 5G is it's about the Internet of Things. So industry want to have everything connected everywhere 24/7. And that's because that's what they want. Whatever they do with their data monitoring, obviously it could be convenient for us. We can turn our central heating on when we're abroad or whatever. But the point is that we don't need to be bathed in a sea of electromagnetic radiation and a higher frequency one at that with 5G. It's not necessary.
Ian, you did. I think you have had a look at the effect on bees.
Yeah, I did do a quick research on bees, and they've been carried out by three countries, including Russia, Germany, and India. In Russia, in 1974, they discovered that the 180 hertz to 250 hertz bees were more affected. And later on, a German scientist discovered that 217 hertz affected what's known as a wiggle dance, is what bees use to communicate. And the 5G, well, not the 5G, but the mobile transmitters were in this wavelength and were affecting the bees.
So, I mean, I've seen birds sitting up on top of the mobile mast. They look perfectly happy.
Well, like us, they can't feel anything. But it is damaging them.
Hang on, Lucy, you said you can feel it. I mean, I have to say, I can feel it. I can feel it.
Yeah, you can feel it. I mean,
when I first got broadband internet at home, you get a little router and you can switch on and off the Wi-Fi. And I just thought, I'll switch it on. And I could feel it straight away. I switched it off and I don't use it at all at home anymore. Obviously, you can't stop it coming through the walls. Do you know how good 5G, any of you, is at coming through walls? Because I understand it's not quite as good as the old 4G, 3G, 2G and the rest of them.
Funny enough, 5G, because it's millimetre waves, it travels very short distances, which is one of the reasons why they need to put antennae every three or four houses. And it doesn't travel through leaves, which is why if you live in a fairly prosperous area with lots of lovely trees, the chances are you won't get 5G.
So it's for council estates and things like that?
It would appear that it's, if they can remove trees, that is a definite advantage to the telecommunications.
Okay, next question. How do you spot a 5G mast and how do you get it removed?
It's very difficult.
Well, a lot of the masts are actually in the new LED lights. and you can spot them because they've got little aerial on.
Okay, well, so like this is on a street light. Yeah,
these on the new LED street lights have got, or a lot of them have got, the 5G transmitters in there. And by the way, it's not just the 5G transmitter, because 5G is about densification. So it's also 2, 3 and 4G. So it transmits all those frequencies.
I mean, at the end of the day, we've got universities full of scientists and companies full of scientists who should know about this. What have scientists actually been saying? I don't know. We can't always trust them, but what have they actually been saying about 5G?
Right. Well, there's a 5G appeal that has been signed by over 250 electromagnetic field scientists from 43 different countries. There's another petition that's been signed by 268 doctors and scientists in the field. And there's also the 5G space petition, which has been signed by nearly 200,000
people. What's the space petition?
That was another group of people said, who were trying to make people aware of the risks of electromagnetic fields, and it's just called the 5G space petition. I can send you links to that.
Yeah, well, so we'll put some, as I say, put links to these up on our show page at dialectradio.co.uk. What about, what can you do? If you're worried about this, how do you know whether maybe it's affecting your health, Lucy? I'll ask you that specifically.
Okay, there are things you can do. But can I first mention that there was the 5G protest day on Saturday, and that was 270 protests in 38 countries. So we're not the only people who are concerned
about it. You must have had some successes where you've stopped 5G. So where
5G has been stopped in the UK, in places like Totnes, Glastonbury, Shepton Mallet, Frome, Stroud, I think, have halted it as well, because they're asking for a moratorium on the rollout of 5G until we've got the research that proves that it is safe.
And what's the government saying about this?
The government is saying absolutely nothing about it, and they are simply
saying
we've got our safety
guidelines. So it's hoping that the protesters go away and that it all gets rolled out before you do
anything. Our safety guidelines are absolutely fine. What they're not saying is that our safety guidelines are much, much lower than most other countries' safety guidelines. Our safety guidelines are like 1,000 times, is it 1,000 times lower than Switzerland, than China or Russia even. I mean, it's ridiculous.
So there are some cities around Europe that have decided they're not going to have anything to do with 5G.
Brussels, funnily enough, has decided it wants nothing to do with 5G at the moment.
And they're just waiting to see, look, we want you to prove it's safe. That seems to be that precautionary principle is not being followed anymore.
No, it's not being followed. And the funny thing is, the government had asked, during Tony Blair's time, there was Sir Stewart who conducted a whole review of the evidence, and he said the precautionary measures should be introduced, and they were completely ignored. So, and that was a government body that asked for that. Now, it's not all negative, because there are things you can do. Basic things like, for instance, not hold your mobile phone right up to your ear. Ideally, not have your mobile phone on you or for as little time as possible.
I mean, it's more dangerous for children, isn't it?
Much more dangerous for children. Lots of people sort of use a mobile phone to keep their very little ones quiet. Well, that's the worst possible thing they can do, because children absorb the electromagnetic fields at much higher levels than we do. I mean, France, for instance, has banned mobile phones in primary schools.
So what else can we do?
What else can we do? We can turn off routers at night. We could turn off our Wi-Fi when it's not in use. We need to avoid smart things. We need to avoid...
Well, you can't actually say if you're buying a washing machine or something now. They've almost all got little smart symbol on it, and you're stupid if you don't want the smart thing.
I know, but we need to sort of force the industry to sort of rethink it.
And I suppose people can contact, if they've got a washing machine or some other device that's got this, they could contact the manufacturer and say, how do I switch it off?
Mm-hmm. They can. Sometimes I think that could be a little bit complicated. Personally, I would never buy a smart thing if I can possibly avoid it. I know I've got Wi-Fi and so on, but we turn it off at night and everything is wired. We've gone back to wiring. I went out and bought a new keyboard the other day In order to avoid using the Wi-Fi one, which is much nicer and much more convenient, but for health reasons, I'm going back to wired.
And there are other things you can do. So what I learned from one of the group who is electro hypersensitive is to have your phone on airplane mode if you don't, if you're not using it. So if you know, if you're in asleep, have it far away from you. And if you are using it and you're out and about, turn your mobile data off, because unless you're actually using it, then you're not drawing so much power and you're not exposing yourself to so much radiation. So there's some very simple tips you can...
I mean, something I'll chip in here is that there may be hope that the 5G can be stopped, because every time they've increased the number of the data, so from whatever, 1G, 2G, 3G, I think it was 2G where it really peaked, that the government were getting a massive amount of millions in licence fees from the telecoms companies like BT and Vodafone, people like that. When 4G was rolled out, they got the lowest amount ever. So it might be that this little boondoggle for the government making fantastic amounts of money from licensing these mobile data contracts or whatever they are, you know, the systems is kind of peaked, and there may be actually not much money in 5G for the government. So that's another potential. Anyway, look, let's round off by I should ask you, Ian, if there's any tips you've got for things people can do.
Probably nothing more than what has been said already. I mean, I personally avoid anything that's got the word smart on it. I don't have my Wi-Fi switched on. I don't keep my mobile phone with me on my person. I don't have my data switched on. I turn it off at night. You know, just things like that. I mean, it's hard to avoid. I have actually got a meter, and I can read what these devices are coming out.
So how do you get a meter? That sounds like a great tip. You can get a meter where you can actually see this invisible energy that's around us.
And you can hear it as well. So they've got devices on that will actually allow you to hear the
How do I get one?
You can buy them on the internet. They're about £160.
And what are we looking for? What's it described as? What is it?
Electromagnetic field meter reader.
Yeah.
And you get like kind of digital readout or something.
Yeah, it can only do up to 4G, because there isn't one available at the moment for 5G.
Oh, that's a shame.
But that's all right. If you know it's going right off the scale, you know you've got a problem.
Okay. And isn't Bristol University involved in all this? Surely they've embraced it, haven't they?
They have, and there's been various problems with some of the testing of driverless cars, and also they had a spate of suicides, which maybe was kind of linked to that.
Maybe the university wasn't being well managed, and that might have had something to do with that as well.
Well, it's all rather...
Don't know about that. But what we do, well, what some of us know, is that the students who did commit suicide were not actually seeking help from the university. And we know that 5G, 3G, 4G has all been linked to neuropsychological problems as well. It can lead to anxiety, depression.
Without you actually knowing what's causing it. This is the scary thing. Anyway, maybe you can just finish off, Lucy, by giving the listeners an idea of how they can get in touch with the group, find out more about you.
Yes, they could. If they go on to stop5g.co.uk, that's a new website that we've set up. They can find lots of information on that. We've also got a Facebook page called Stop5G. There's another Facebook page which is full of really useful information, and that's Halt 5G in the UK and Ireland.
And what about anything Bristol specific?
Bristol specific is the stop5g.co.uk, and we're a group and we meet up every 2 or 3 weeks. So it'd be lovely if people would join us.
And what if people actually don't use the internet?
I know.
That people
is
just
a
listen
problem.
To the radio sometimes, don't they? Yeah. Not everyone has got the internet.
No, that is true. So they can always come along to the meetings. They'll have to go and have a look on the website, so they have to use it for a short while or ask a friend to look for them, because we do have lots of people who are electromagnetically sensitive, and they are difficult to to communicate with sometimes because they don't want to be on the internet.
No.
But there are ways around it.
Okay, so whereabouts, Mark?
Oh, just saying, to end with, can we recommend a Panorama program that was aired, well, a while ago now, 2007, but it's a really good introduction to an overview of electromagnetic radiation and what people, well, how people can learn more about it. It's called Wi-Fi, a Warning Signal.
Finally, have you got an email address?
You mean for people to contact us? Do you know, I haven't got
via
that.
Via the website, I think. If they
via the website would be the best idea.
Okay, remind us, yeah, finally, the website again. You could even say
5G.
It in harmony if you want to.
.5G.co.uk.
Okay. So, Bristol Residents Against 5G, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
A new single from Manifesto, 12-inch on Fire Records. This is from Washington, D.C., but as they point out, not the usual Washington, D.C. noise at all. I like the guitar on this. We'll be right back. Manifesto on Fire Records, a 12-inch, and that's Walking Backwards.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
I'm Amira Cole, and I'm actually unemployed at the moment. I was manager of the Malcolm X Community Centre, was really involved in that Save the Malcolm X campaign, where Bristol City Council wanted to take back the building.
And did you succeed? I mean, who's running it nowadays?
Yes, the community has the building. We secured a 28-year lease. Which was the most we could get at the time, and that was my bit done. So I'm having a break.
It's quite an important bit of space, that, isn't it? I mean, it was built, I think, after the St Paul's riots, that sort of thing.
That's right. It was one of the spaces that was allocated to the community after the riots. So yeah.
What about this campaign about saving the maples, though? Because what's that all about?
Okay, so the. Yeah, so the Save the Maples, the M32 Maples, which is the five maple trees which are on Lower Ashley Road as you go on to the roundabout before you get to the M32. So two of those trees have now been cut down, and we are trying to save the other three.
So why is this so important to you?
It's really important, I think, there are a number of reasons. One, because it's trees and the importance that trees have in the whole ecosystem.
Well, we're supposed to be a green city, aren't we? We're just banning diesel cars and things like that from the city centre, about to anyway.
Well, yes, and it takes lots of things on lots of different levels for us to get to a green city, and the trees need to be a part of that process. And so that's part of why we're working so hard to save those trees. But it's not just about, the campaign is about those trees, but trees are going everywhere, and we're saying that we're going to increase the canopy cover in Bristol, but if we keep chopping down trees, the fact that we just plant hundreds of other ones will not give us that.
Well, the government's talking about planting millions of trees.
Yes, but they have to keep the trees they've got. They've got to remember their starting point.
I mean, you've got a situation there, I imagine, where someone has got planning permission to get rid of these trees, and it's all been ticked off. Is that the case or not?
Well, so this is another point for us.
Because it's a real derelict site, isn't it? And it's been an eyesore for years now. I would imagine that getting rid of the trees is part of the new development, am I right?
Yes, but there is still issues around who actually owns the land and whether the developer does actually have the right to cut those trees down, and that, and if the developer owns that land. The research that we have done has shown that the land does not belong to the developer.
Oh, are the trees in the way of something then? Does that sound like that might be?
They're in the way of the new development.
Okay, so what's planned for along there? I mean, for anyone that doesn't know Lower Ashley Road, it's right on the M32 Junction 3, is it?
Yes, that's right.
If you're coming into Bristol and you turn on Junction 3, turn right in towards St Paul's.
That's right.
There you'll see these trees on your right. But what efforts have you gone to see whether the people who've cut them down have been complying with the law or not?
Okay, so we've had quite a few people on researching this. We've looked at documents in terms of land ownership, and as I said before, the land does not say that the developer owns that land. There are also a number of I guess they call them anomalies in the planning application. The 2015 planning application was for about 78 student accommodations. That's now changed, and now what we're looking at is affordable housing on that site. So,
well, you're lucky there. It's normally going the other way round.
Well, I think that Ashley has enough student accommodations. Stoatscroft is going to be full of them. So, and for us, it's not a case of trees or housing. We know the city needs both. What we're saying is that developers need to have a look at how they can work with the trees, work with the environment, work with, you know, trees that have TPOs, trees.
Tree protection order.
Tree protection orders.
That sounds good.
Yes.
So are you going to be able to get one of those on these trees?
The trees have TPOs. All five of them had TPOs, even the two that have been cut down.
So they've just gone in there mob-handed, have they?
That's right. That's how it
happens. That's the right word, yes.
And I'm also joined by Ornella Sabin. And Ornella, what's your role been in this?
Well, I've just been seeing that there was a campaign going, and when I heard that the developers went to chop another tree down on New Year's Day, I went.
So it was one chopped down surreptitiously,
wasn't it? Yeah,
so it all really started in June last year, where they went to try and chop down a tree, but they were stopped by the residents and one of the local councillors. And then we had, through meetings, there was an agreement. We thought we had an agreement where no other work would happen on the site until the new planning application was going to be looked at by the committee, which should have been March, which is coming up now. But on New Year's Eve, they went in again, and this time they did actually manage to chop down two trees. So two of the five trees are now actually gone.
Amazing. And is there anything you can do legally against these people for doing that?
A big part of that depends on who owns that land. If that is public land, or if that land belongs to Bristol City Council or the Iways, then there is things that we can do.
Okay.
If it belongs to the developer, then of course the developer has the right. What we're saying is, we have found documents, Bristol City Council documents, which do not prove that the developer owns that land.
Interesting. So Ornella, back to you. How come you got involved then?
Well, so when I heard the tree was getting chopped again, I knew about the campaign, and so I was ready to go and defend the trees. So I started going on the vigil.
A vigil? So that's...
A vigil to protect the trees.
Yes. Front line.
So literally you had to kind of go out there and almost camp out or something.
Well, yeah, we had a rota for people to watch the trees constantly.
Wow.
Because it's really interesting that they say the trees are there, yet legally they're meant to ask for the pavement to be blocked, which they never asked for. They seem to want to do it in an underhand sort of way, which is dangerous to the public, and also none of their workers are protected. None of them are wearing hard hats. It's just a really dangerous situation.
It sounds like a bit of a gangster operation.
Exactly. So we feel that even the way they're behaving shows that maybe they know they haven't got a right to cut those trees down, which is another thing that will come up. Maybe they do know that the land doesn't belong to them, but they were hoping to get away with it.
God, it's amazing that can happen in a modern city.
Yeah, exactly. So all these developments that are going on, how much are these developers allowed to overstep the mark from what whatever they've been allowed to do.
I mean, I would imagine this sort of thing wouldn't happen somewhere like Clifton. There'd be a massive local, you know, well-heeled campaign, legal things and that sort of thing to stop it. And maybe it's just because it's around St Paul's area that they think they can get away with it.
Maybe. The other thing as well that really, they say that the levels, our air quality levels are illegal, aren't they, initially, aren't they? That we live less longer than Clifton people because our air quality is so bad. I think it's something like 5 days a week, five people a week that die of pollution now in Bristol. There's all sorts of things. I mean, a local group, Full Circle, they work with young people. 70% of their children have got asthma problems. So we got this really bad air quality, which is illegal, and yet they're cutting trees. It doesn't make sense.
Well, and also they're building incinerators in Avonmouth, which are then wafting loads of stuff coming out the top of those straight over the top of the city. Mm-hmm. Look, I'll leave the final word to you, Amira. What can people do to actually help?
So people need to get to contact their local councillors, their MPs, you know, the planning department. We really do need to change the way that people think about trees, and we need to change the way that developers work in our city. You know, it should be that they work with the priority to work around particularly mature trees or important trees.
What about putting metal around the tree somehow, protecting it so that if someone tries to come to it with a chainsaw?
Wow. Well, you know, we never know.
Go on then, Tony. You go down there with your tools.
I'm talking of armoured trees. Armoured trees.
No, they need to breathe. They need to, you know.
Well, they breathe through their leaves, not through the bark.
Yeah, but there are insects and stuff in their trunks and stuff like that.
But anyway, is it ridiculous that we're having this conversation where you think that you have to do something like that to stop a tree being cut down? I mean, someone might turn up, of course, at 4 o'clock. I don't want to give them ideas, but 4 o'clock in the morning, you know?
And yes, I do think it's ridiculous, particularly as Bristol has declared a climate crisis. Yeah. I do think it is ridiculous that we have to be having this conversation and that the most natural form of which creates oxygen is being taken away. And we're still having this conversation around trees or accommodation, you know.
So can we find you on social media? That's the place most of the time.
Yes,
yeah.
It's Save the M32 Maples on Facebook. Save the M32 Maples.
So Amira Cole and Ornella Sabin, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car or anywhere you like. Suggest interviewees, subscribe to our email list and listen the week before broadcast if you like at our website, dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Ian Usher, Mark Simmons and Lucy Harper from Bristol Residents Against 5G. And also Amira Cole and Ornella Sabin from Save the M32 Maples. Also thanks to studio engineer Dave Bozanko. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production catches on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street. They're online at prsc.org.uk, or you can pick up a phone 0117 909 6897. That's 0117 909 6897. If you've got some of your precious time to spare, you can volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the National Volunteering website. That's do-it.org. Thanks for listening to Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my two-hour BCFM politics show, live from 6 till 8 p.m. Meanwhile, till next Tuesday midday from the Dialect crew, goodbye for now. Thank you.
hungry.